EMS on the Mountain is an entertainment, educational, and commentary product recorded by Sean and Mike and produced by them. Nothing recorded by Sean, Mike, or any of the guests of the show is endorsed nor authorized by their respective employers or agencies unless explicitly outlined. All commentary and statements made are their own. Always follow your respective medical protocols. Nothing said on this platform should be considered medical direction. Now, on with the show.
And
welcome to the EMS on the Mountain podcast, a show for those interested in austere and wilderness medicine. This podcast provides insight into the unique aspects and challenges of bringing modern EMS into wilderness and austere environments.
Let's try this again, folks. See if you'll be able to hear the lesser half of the show. We all know now what the show revolves around, and it's not the other dude. But we're back.
Yeah, so apparently I suck at technology.
Yeah, and, which is odd for a technologist, but it is what it is.
Yeah, turns out that my audio was completely jacked up in the last episode, but I don't really feel like replacing it and trying to do it over. So we're just going to do version Bravo, or B.
You mean do it over?
Yeah, that too. Of me fall down, go boom.
Yeah, and just so you folks know, you obviously, one person actually noticed and bothered to let us know because we don't listen to our own podcast anymore, but...
Yeah, we only have one listener.
He wins. Yeah. But yeah, there was a bit of a glitch with the Matrix and the audio. Mike did make a valiant effort to get some things fixed. It just didn't work out, so we're going to try it again. And so basically what we're going to talk about is... You've already seen the social media post of, like, I don't know, 18 years ago now.
That was a month ago? It's funny how life gets in the way of recording a podcast, huh?
With Mike and a fat lip and a sea collar on his face. So yeah, what we're going to talk about, yeah, is essentially the perspective from the patient of EMS and the hospital, that whole experience of what that's like, just because Mike has some very recent experience. You heard me talk about it by myself about a couple of experiences I had before. I don't think we're going to rehash my stuff too much. We're just going to focus more on Mike. If you listen to my solo soliloquy and odd pauses on the last one we tried to put out.
Yeah, apparently there was just a lot of me not being there.
Yeah, there's
Thanks
a lot of me
everybody
talking
that
and
reached
asking
out
questions.
And let us know it was broken, by the way.
Yeah, so we do appreciate the help now again. So yeah. With that, yeah, so Mike had a bit of a fall down, go boom, and I guess we'll let you start telling that story and I'll ask you questions as we go.
Long story short, I fall down and go boom. I was on duty and then I hit my head, and because we work in EMS and I met all the criteria for, dude, he's pretty jacked up. So a bunch of folks that I would call friends decided to put me in a medic unit, stick some lines in me, do the medic thing, take me to the doctor place where I got to spend a total of 6+ hours in the emergency room. I'm rehashing what was said because apparently last time my telling of the story didn't come through. So yeah, I got some unique perspective on being a patient, and we thought this would be an interesting opportunity since I am a paramedic and I'm also now a versed patient to getting trauma activated, having my clothes cut off and being shoved into a CT scanner. So
yeah.
Let's talk about that a little bit. First off, I think sometimes these are going to be general takeaways, and Sean's going to have questions, I'm sure. But let me talk a little bit about just the before you get to the hospital and the trauma activation piece and how it has changed my practice. I have become more aware of the fact that it can be, I mean, I knew everything that was going to happen to me. I knew directionally. I've taken many a patient to the room that I was taken to with the bright lights and the doctors and everybody running around and the nurses and the multiple IVs and all the things and the shears cutting my clothes off. Have I mentioned I got trauma naked?
Naked.
But sometimes we forget from the patient perspective, this is a pretty crappy situation. So first and foremost, right, I got collared. Everybody's seen the picture at this point, I hope. Being in a collar sucks. And I think sometimes we lose sight of the fact, even in the back of a unit, that when you put somebody in a collar and then you talk to them, they can't turn their head very well or look at you. And the human nature is to look at the person you're conversing with and try to talk to them. And I think sometimes I've seen it in precepting, and I'm sure I've done it many a time, where I say to the patient, now don't look at me, just answer me. That's easier said than done, right? Like, I spent the ride staring at the ceiling, having people doing their damnedest to take care of me. No, very professional. Everybody that took care of me did a great job. It's a little disconcerting if you've never been in the back of an ambulance before. And I have. And I'm like, I was staring at the ceiling of the ambulance, just having people doing things to me. It's probably helpful to take a little time and explain to your patient what's going to happen, especially if they're lucid or semi-lucid. It's amazing what you can remember or what people assume you cannot hear or perceive. And we've probably talked about it before. There's a lot of people that talk about this. Your auditory senses are some of the last things to go. So even when you can't talk, you can usually hear. Mm-hmm. And you can interpret things. You just can't respond. And being talked about versus being talked to is a really unpleasant experience as a patient. And all of us as care providers, we have work we have to do. There are things that have to get done. But I guess my first observation would be, don't forget that your patient has no idea what's going to happen to them, and letting them know and giving them a little heads up. Like, now you can expect, even if it's simple things like, I'm going to start an IV in your left arm, I'm going to get you some medication. Once you get to the hospital, the following is going to happen. It's going to be a bright room. There's going to be people, because you hit your head, they're most likely, never be definitive, but most likely going to get a CT scan. They're going to do a chest X-ray. I was getting wheeled all around that hospital into various rooms and put into machines and stuff and slid back and forth on boards. And if you don't have the exposure, which 99% of our patients do not have this exposure, especially trauma patients, like younger trauma patients may have never had a CT scan before. Just taking the time to explain. It's a big tube. They're going to slide you into it. They're going to take a picture of your head. They're going to look for bleeding, that sort of thing. Like, I feel as though that can go a long way to giving them a little bit of a sense of what's going on. Because we've talked about this before, but the only time that it's a one-on-one experience for the patient is when you're in the back of the ambulance. Like, once you get to the hospital, once they're done with the original trauma activation and the initial modified trauma activation, trauma bay one, everybody goes running and they all do their job. And then just as quickly as they got there, they got to go back to the other rooms that they were taking care of, right? The neurologist has other cases he's got to look at, and the attending has things he's got to do, and he's got 15 other rooms waiting for him. And I'll get to that a little bit. That's part of the reason I was there for 6 hours. But
yeah, this 2 weeks ago now, I had a pretty significant trauma patient, motor vehicle, big mess on the road. And myself and another transport unit, another medic unit, we ended up transporting not generally, but out of our response area up to the local level one trauma center, just because both of these individuals were.
That's a hole for you too.
Yeah, it is. It's not close. Right?
No.
But weather prevented flight. It was ground transport. But it was, like you mentioned, it's okay, I'm back there with this guy, and I've got myself, and I had an EMT partner in the back with me, and then another EMT driving up front. And talking to my guy, and probably never going to figure out who it was, but just to keep things general, right? He had a couple of really significant trauma injuries. But he was conscious, alert, and oriented the whole time we're driving him. And it was like, all right, my man, we've already made him buck naked. We got the heater blasting. He's covered in blankets, trying to do our normal trauma management stuff. It's like, all right, when we get up into the ED, it's going to be bright lights. There's going to be a lot of noise, a lot of people talking. You're going to hear a lot of people asking you the same questions I've already asked you. You're going to hear the same repeat question. As I just do your best to answer. Don't get grumpy at them. They're just trying to help. There's going to be different doctors. They've all got different specialties. They all need to figure out if they need to do something for you or not. So it's all about providing, and then give them that whole rundown.
Yeah.
And I think it really helps them. And I'm sure you'll talk about it in a minute, but even knowing it's coming, that sudden experience of, holy shit, he wasn't kidding. There's bright lights, and now there's 20 people in different colored scrubs, and they're asking questions, and they're telling me to clench my butt cheeks, and what the hell's that about? Fucking, like, rectal
it's
tone, brother.
Butt cheeks.
Right?
It's always the butt cheeks.
Yeah. Right? Go check in neurodeficits, in case people were wondering why they do that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's a thing.
And then it's he didn't want pain meds with me, and they offered him more pain meds in the ED, and he's like, and they're like, okay, let's manipulate this giant broken twisted thing so we can see what's going on. And You want anything for that? Nope, I'm good. It's like, okay, brother, in a little bit, you're going to want something, man. It was trying to do that, brief him, because he was sitting quiet with us, me and one other guy, not having to do a lot in the back. I kept reassessing, going back and forth, looking through all the, seeing if any of the internal stuff started to develop in his abdomen and everything else. But my EMT, like, essentially just hanging out, charting for me while we're driving, because everything else was relatively, for as injured as he was, remarkably stable, which, good for me. But
good for him, too.
Turns out
that's a positive thing for the patient.
Saying clearly good for him, right? But yeah.
Score like, 1.2, so I guess we're doing okay.
Yes. We're driving back down to my station afterwards and finishing up the chart and everything. And I chuckled to myself, like, this goes back to that episode that almost went out. Like, we were talking about, like, talking to your patients and trying to help them, that expectation management of, hey, this shit's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
Here's what you can do to be prepared and do your best, because, man, if you don't and you're just like wheeling them in and you start yelling things to a doctor and a nurse up the receiving station, like, that dude's, what just happened? Where's the one guy I know in this room?
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
That also speaks to, how do I describe this? Oftentimes, and I'm, again, this is not wilderness related per se, unless you happen to be a provider coming out of the woods with a patient. It's okay to stick around for an extra minute.
Oh, yeah.
I sometimes feel like we, by default, system management and getting trucks back on the road and cleaning up and all those things, we sometimes lose focus of the fact that even though they're in the ED, like, we probably have the best understanding. We've got the pictures. If you did a good job and took pictures of the accident scene in your case, or, and I didn't have any pictures of where I fell down, went boom, but I realized after the fact that if I'd had the wherewithal, which I didn't, because I was concussed and
there's a reason. Yeah. You went to the hospital, my friend,
but nobody really had any imagery of what happened to me. And bringing all of that information to bear helps the hospital system. And I would never advocate that you stick around the whole time until your patient leaves the trauma bay. But oftentimes, historically, I've given the report, talked to the room, answered a couple of questions, given some information, given the ID to the charting nurse and all that stuff. And then I'm like, all right, cool, sign here, I'm out. And I roll.
Yeah.
But simple things like, has somebody gotten a hold of family? Has this been taken care of? I actually, so I don't mind talking about what happened to me. Ironically, I was at a volley house that day. I was volunteering. I was not being paid. But the guy that ran me is my chief at the volunteer house. So he had the additional duties of chiefdom, making sure the member is taken care of and calling the safety officer and getting all of that stuff taken care of. So he was there for a while, but he was in and out of the room probably half a dozen times. He contacted my wife. He did all those things, but he was doing it because it's the right thing to do. But also he was doing it because he was a member of the system. But do we do that for everyone? Do we make sure it happens? And that's not to say that the hospital system won't do it. In fact, I'll argue 90%+ of the time they will. But again, I had three different nurses that I each saw one time. They came in, asked me how I was doing. And it's, again, for anybody listening that's done any nursing or is married to a nurse or dates a nurse or whatever, like, it is a thankless job, right? You are constantly in and out of rooms, doing things, looking for orders, talking to the doctor. This patient needs this, and this patient needs this, and this guy wants another blanket, and this guy, he's been here for 4 hours, and he's pissed off that he's here, and I'm tired of dealing with him. All of those things happen on a daily shift for nurses. But it is important because I keep coming back to this advocacy thing. I got stuck in a room for 6 hours in a C-collar under a couple of hospital blankets. Very little clothing. Yeah, you like that, don't you, Sean?
Yeah, I do. Solid visual right there.
Clinching my butt cheeks. But I couldn't, I could have popped my collar off, and boy, did I think about it. But it was like 3.5-4 hours before anybody looked at my imagery, because it turned out that day, the attending, who I happen to know, came in 5 hours into the dance. He was like, hey, man, I'm so sorry. And then he did the whole, oh, what's up? Like, I know you. Yeah. But he was like, yeah, we had like 2 cardiac arrests and a stroke alert come in the time. Like, so as soon as you left the trauma bay, like, we had other work to do, right?
Yeah.
And once we stabilize patients in an emergency situation, whether it's pre-hospital or in the hospital, sometimes other things take our attention.
Yeah.
So everything you can do prior to dropping the patient off and setting expectations. My particular system, I was not offered opiates. Opiates would not have been the most germane thing for me. I didn't really need opiates. I wasn't in that kind of pain. But we don't have Toradol on the trucks. I had a pretty raging headache. I had a big old goose egg on my head, and like I looked like I'd been through hell. But it took my second or third nurse before I was like, hey, man, can anybody like give me an order for Toradol? That'd be cool, because I know you're not going to let me take Advil orally while I'm laying here in a C-collar supine in this bed. So, yeah, getting those things on board. I talked about this in the last podcast that nobody heard, but it always enrages me when providers, here we go again. Maybe it was Mike on the World's Okayest Paramedic. Somebody recently talked about this on a podcast, like doing all the things you can do, even when in close proximity to the hospital, is usually in the best interest of the patient. If you have the ability to give the medications or do the things and start the interventions, even if they're 10 minutes from the ED, if you could just open the drug box and get those medications on board, it may be 45 minutes to an hour after they've been initially seen at the hospital before anybody gets the opportunity to come back around and make sure. If it's a busy ED, you could end up for a while going, man, this really hurts, or my ankle is all jacked up, and then you got to go get secondary imaging and all this stuff. You can be there for quite a while. So anything you can do to set expectations, I'll summarize it in saying I have a much better appreciation for especially our older demographic, our patients that you go to their house and they're like, I fell down or my hip hurts. And you say, we probably need to get you over to the hospital to have them take a look. And they always say, fuck no, I don't want to go to that hospital. Like, I'm going to be there the rest of the night. I have a much better appreciation for that perspective, because it sucks, man. It just sucks. Yeah. You know?
No. And going back to that, giving the meds that they need when they need it, like that is a big pet peeve of mine as well. I have patients, they'll get maybe that initial bump of fentanyl, things are doing, they feel okay. And then it's like, we're getting into the hospital. It's like, all right, man, how's your pain? It's like, it's creeping up a bit. It's like, okay, I'm going to give you one more. It's like, oh, I can wait. It's like, no, man, you're going to get this now. Trust me.
Yeah, don't wait.
Yeah, because it's like, I'll wait until I like get ready to slide you from my cot to the hospital, man. And then like, boop, there you go. Right. Okay. You're no longer mine.
Taste.
Yeah. Here you go. Here's another bump. Like, this should carry you through until the doctor finally gets around and you get your orders and you finally get something else. But yeah, it's the same thing. And then there's a facility we respond to pretty often, and it's, you know, for older folks, like Alzheimer's memory care as well. Mm-hmm. And it is almost literally across the street from the hospital. And a lot of people are like, we're not even 5 minutes. Let's just drive them there. And some of these people, it's like when they fall and it's like you have a dislocated or a fractured hip. Man, why are we not giving them pain management now? Why are we like thinking they're just, we'll just drive them the 5 minutes literally out of the driveway down into the ED parking lot and into the bed? Because then it's going to be maybe an hour before they get that, because they're wanting to get imagery and everything else. And something else got to take the priority. When you could have given them something for those pain already and already made their experience a little bit better. Come on.
Yeah. I think back to all the patients I've had over the years. I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before. One of the places I run has 5 nursing homes in the DEW. We spend a lot of time with old folks in nursing homes.
Yeah.
But one of them is palliative care / end of life management dementia sort of facility, right? It's literally in the same building as the emergency room. It's in hospital. It's in the same parking lot. We get dispatched to go to this place, take them out the door, put them in the rig, drive them 300 feet, and take them into the ED.
Yeah.
Wow. And the number of patients that have fallen, or Nancy fell out of bed, or Timmy's shoulder is dislocated, but the number of times I've gone, I'm not even going to start a line. They'll be in the emergency room in a minute. It could be, get that emergency room busy. It could be an hour before anybody comes in and sees them. And they're just laying there in agony the whole time. It's changed my practice for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing, I realized that we still believe that there's a reason for them, but I'm actually going to give a shout out to a different podcast. I know Sean listens to this one as well. We've talked about it before, but The Recess Room just did an episode on trauma management and backboards and some studies out of Europe, right? Did you listen to that one, Sean?
No, not yet.
It's on
the list. So
it is fascinating. Like I've known of these studies before, but we've determined, and I'm not I'm not going to do the study justice, so please go listen to it yourselves. It's called The Recess Room. But all of the time and energy we've spent in EMS to get in the back seat and hold that guy's neck and all these things that we do, it turns out that like the patient, like all the roofs that we've cut and all the A pillars and C pillars that we've cut over time and rolled roofs and rolled dashes to make sure we don't hurt people. Turns out people can manage their own pain and they understand when they're hurt pretty well. And if they still have, if it turns out they can't feel anything below their nipple line, that's probably an indication of something too, right?
Yeah.
But all these people that we're protecting and putting in collars and making them turn funny ways, one of the studies they were talking about, they found that there's more injury that occurs by trying to manage the injury than just letting the patient get out of the damn car on their own.
Yeah.
And after spending 6 hours in a C-collar, I can appreciate the fact that if my neck hurts and I jacked something up, you know what? Like, I'm probably going to know because there's going to be pain.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be like, oh, it hurts. This is painful. But I'm not going to say that our current practices of backboarding and C-collars, they're slowly fading from EMS. But I say there's a ton of systems that still do it. But
no, and that was one of those because, again, that big accident I ran a couple weeks ago. Your car's upside down on its roof, dude. Like, you're complaining of some neck and back pain. So he got the full Monty, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like one of those balls. And I was so happy when we got him into the trauma bay. And they got him in. They did, they do the rapid trauma assessment, just like we do, just a doctor doing that stuff. And he went through, I'm talking to me, any neurodeficits, back, spinal, it's like negative, blah, blah, blah. This is it. This is why. He's like, cool. And then they pulled him off the board immediately. And I was like, oh, that is so refreshing to see. Instead of that guy sitting, because I've seen guys sit on backboards for hours too, for no reason other than nobody thought to just take them off. But they cleared his spine and had him off that board like in minutes. Like, it was beautiful to see that they were so quick to recognize that's a thing that doesn't need to be there if it doesn't need to be there, and they got him out of it. And I don't know, I'm trying to think about C-collar-wise how long they kept him in that, but I don't think he stayed in that a whole lot longer either once they shot imagery of his neck and dome. And then they were like, all right, everything's clear, and they popped him out of that too. And it was like really good and refreshing to see because, sometimes, man, like your instance, 6 hours, 4 hours in a C-collar, there are so many studies out there that it's just worse. The hyperflexion, like
the inability to roll over and look at my wife and talk to her.
Like, yeah.
It sucked. And here's the part that doesn't get talked about, but for family, like they're sitting there worried, and I didn't encourage my wife to go ask what the hell's going on, but it's okay to advocate too, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously we need to leave and go back in service, but
yeah,
things aren't happening. If patients aren't getting blankets, if they're cold, whatever. Most systems, you spend a few minutes at the hospital doing the chart. And I've made a habit of my practice that before I go out to the truck and get in the passenger seat and head on out,
the officer seat.
I always go in and say goodbye to my patient and make sure that they have any questions. Is there anything I can do for you, et cetera, et cetera. And I think a lot of providers do that, but
yeah,
that may be the only time that person gets the opportunity to say, yeah, you know, actually, like, the nurse came in and talked to you, and I haven't seen them since, and they said they were going to do blah, and, like, I'm cold, or I need a blanket, or whatever the case may be, or, you know, even simple things like, yeah, my headache's getting a lot worse, and I can't see out of my right eye. Like, you might be the person that catches that thing.
Yeah.
Like, it could happen. So, yeah, I guess that sums it up. I had more to say before, but
yeah, so the first time we did this was way better, but
yeah, I mean, described getting trauma naked and getting shoved in the room, but also you told your stories, and it turns out that
not going to rehash those because you guys heard those if you've listened to the One-Sided podcast. Not that mine is nearly as exciting as his, even though I did end up fracturing my spine, whatever. You do you, big guy. I think this just goes back to the remember that your patient is a person too, not just an inanimate object. Talk to your patients. I think last time we talked about it, and it's something I try to teach when I'm teaching patient assessment, is talk out loud to your patient. Hey, we're going to take a look at your head. This is what I'm looking for. Tell me if you feel anything. And is when I'm teaching it to the new EMTs or just refresher stuff doing assessment training, it's a way to walk yourself through it so that you don't forget it. And at the same time, you're communicating with your patient. Because again, yeah, if they're in one of those C-collar backboard situations, and they can't see what's going on, they're not sitting up, they can't look around, that's all they've got. And you got to talk like, hey, I'm going to come down, I'm going to be touching your stomach now. Tell me if anything hurts, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then just keep, and you got to be looking at your patient, talking to your patient. And just don't forget they're a patient and they're a person and not just another thing you've got to get through. You got to remember that. And sometimes it's hard, especially when we get busy or tired. We talked about one of the rescues Mike and I had participated in, and they'd been out doing this carryout for a long time. It's late, it's dark. I think it was after midnight at that point. And
it was.
Yeah. They set the patient down to rest, and everybody would go walk away and sit down and leave that patient in a Stokes just sitting there by themselves in the dark. Holy shit. Don't forget, they went from having 6-8 people surrounding them and a lot of voices and stuff going around to suddenly everybody just quiet, some muffled conversations, and they're just sitting alone in the middle of a trail, still strapped down to a Stokes, which for all intents and purposes is a backboard with better handles. For our wilderness friends, don't just, you're tired, it's late, I get it. Like sometimes it's hard, but you got to stay focused. Remember, you've got a patient. I think we mentioned last time, Mick, if I've got to take a break, and Mike and I are lucky, we get to work as partners a lot. We very seldom get split up when we do our backcountry work. But yeah, it happens. We do. But
pretty awesome, right?
A lot of times, yeah, we stay together and we have the partnership still. So it's, if I'm the primary and I've got to step away to take care of bodily functions or whatever it is, or just sit myself down, Mike knows what's going on and he can sit there with the patient and vice versa. Yeah. So it's, yeah, don't forget to just stay with your patients, talk to them, communicate. Don't let them think they're alone. That's bullshit, like to ruin their whole mental attitude about life. They're injured. They're scared. Don't give them more reason to be nervous and upset about what's going on. That's enough about that.
Yeah. I talked a lot more about the individual experiences, but I think everybody generally understands what happens when you get trauma activated. You get wheeled in. There's a report given. There's a bunch of sliding back and forth on boards. You get put in a CT scanner. That probably takes an hour, and then they wait.
Yeah.
And making sure that they're, I guess I'll summarize it in saying, make sure they're duly equipped to understand what's about to happen, and make sure that everything you can take care of is taken care of before you depart, because
absolutely.
Again, this is the only time that we're with the patient one-on-one. Once they get to the hospital, they're one of N that needs attention. Yeah. And if it's busy, it can take a while to get the attention they need. So, yeah. All right. That was an awesome 29-minute podcast. So, Sean, you got any other advice?
No, I think that really sums it up, right? And I think something we mentioned last time that they might have missed out on is, especially for our backcountry friends, if you get the opportunity to play patient and be in a Stokes.
Oh, yeah, do it.
Doing the carryout, be the patient on a carryout, be the patient on a vertical, like rescues, doing your tech rescue, because that's a whole nother thing too, right?
Dude, that's a whole other level.
That's a different perspective, right? And if you don't understand what your patient's going through, it's hard to empathize and help walk them through it. So if you ever get the chance with your SAR teams or whoever you work with backcountry-wise, be the patient. And not just like 15 minutes of some exercise, like be in that Stokes for a good hour, being carried. And then you get that appreciation of when the head is up, the head is down, the Stokes is at an angle and whatever. It's, hey guys, can we get my head level again? Sorry. Right. I know we mentioned that last time. Right?
Yeah. For the wilderness, be the patient. Folks, if you've never been strapped into a Stokes and then had the attendant or the crew simulate the patient vomiting having them turn the basket with you in it. Because people don't realize this, right? Even for fit Americans, for the four of us that are out there, and I probably shouldn't put myself in that bucket, the human body has a greater depth than the depth of a Stokes. Once you're strapped down into the Stokes, and then they simulate the vomiting aspects or the need to clear an airway, you feel like you are hanging in free air. All you can see, especially if you're collared, is the attendant lean over and turn the Stokes 45 degrees to clear your airway. If they're conscious for any of that, or even the bumps and the jiggers and the bouncing off the rock and the feet get pulled up, and it is, I've actually been a patient for an exercise for a pike and pivot, And we haven't really talked about that, but a pike and pivot's where you trim the stokes vertical to get it over the lip. And dude, you're supported by what's holding you in the stokes, and you're staring out into the abyss, and you can't really, there isn't much you can do about it. Like, your arms are strapped down, your body's strapped down, and you're hoping, like, it feels like you're going to get dropped, and there ain't much you can do about it.
Yeah. So, I think that was one of the last things I definitely think we want to remind folks of, is if you've never been the patient, heck, even in, if you're one of our listeners that doesn't do any wilderness and you're just an urban, regular EMT paramedic, if you're doing training exercises, be a patient, get backboarded, get collared, get put in your, if you're using your full ambulance and everything else, feel what it's like when that cot gets lifted and moved and put in and out. A couple bumps. What's that really like?
Yes.
If you're working in a first world developed EMS system that's got power load cots, I weep for you guys. I can't believe on the social medias how many places they still don't have power load cots. Hey guys, it's 2024. You got to get your agencies on board. We are at state law. So, hey, good for us. Yeah. But be the patient. Get simulated patients, not the same, but be the patient. Get that experience. See what it's like. Yeah, and again, especially technical rescue in that Stokes or just on a carryout, do it. Like, it's because it's a whole different ballgame. Anyway, all right. I think that's the last of my ranting or commenting, whatever we want to call that.
All right. Then with that, I'm going to hit the button.
If you have any questions or comments or ideas for show topics, you can send us an email at theshow@emsonthemountain.com or hit us up on social media. We can be found on Facebook and Instagram at EMS on the Mountain, Twitter at EMSOTM, or you can engage with us and a whole community of wilderness EMS professionals at locals.com/wilderness EMS.
Until the next episode, thanks for joining us. And until we see you on the mountain, train hard, be safe, and do good work.